I'd like to welcome each and every one of you to Spotlight this morning. I am Country Muse Mar, and I have the distinct honor and privilege this morning of being able to interview our good buddy Larry from Tennessee. And of course, it's not morning everywhere, but it still is here in Southern California. So if I slip up and say good morning, that's the reason why. And Larry, it's great to have you here today.
It's great to be here. I'm honored to have the privilege to be on here with all these fine people.
Well, of course, you are one of our fellow musician friends, and I'm sure people are going to be very interested in knowing all the things about you. So I guess we'll start at the beginning. That's always a good place to start. And I'll try to be as chronological about these things as I can. You are from Tennessee now, and have you lived in Tennessee all your life?
Well, not yet, but for most of my life I have. Heard somebody ask that question not long ago. I thought that was a pretty good answer. I hope to have several more years to live yet.
I think I asked you on my preliminary, and you told me the same thing. Yeah, anyway, and were you born in the same area that you live now?
Yes, I was born in Athens, Tennessee, and that's where I've lived for the majority of my life.
And what is your cause of blindness?
Well, the doctor told us that my optic nerve failed to develop.
I see. Well, so have you been totally blind all your life, or have you had some sight at one time, or do you still have any sight?
No, I've been totally blind since birth.
Are there any memories from your preschool days that stand out as something you might want to tell us about?
Well, from a very early age, I discovered that I was interested in music. I discovered that I liked music. And in fact, I couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 years old. And we had a lady who lived next door to us who was a good musician. And I used to hear her practicing piano. And, you know, I could hear it through the window if we had the window open. And so I got out in the yard one day while she was practicing and just followed the sound and went over to her house and stood under the window and listened to it. And so I really enjoyed piano and, well, actually any kind of music for that matter. And one story that my grandmother used to like to tell was, one Saturday when she had taken me to town, we were in the dime store, and I picked up a cowbell and started ringing it. So I liked anything that would make a noise, especially if it had a musical sound to it.
I just thought of an interesting question that I haven't asked anybody before, but I know for myself, in those early days before I started interacting with other kids, and I don't know if you had any siblings or not, but I didn't think there was anything different about me. And in fact, it wasn't really until I started attending school that I realized that I was different from other kids. And before that, I thought I was perfectly normal. At what age did you begin to realize that you were different from other kids?
Well, I was somewhat like you in that regard for a while, but fortunately, I got to do a lot of the same things that the other kids did as far as playing. I had, you know, had my playmates, and I did a lot of the things that so-called normal kids did, you know, as far as playing and I had a tricycle, and later on had a bicycle, and played on the swing sets, you know, like the other kids, and the slides and all like that. I guess it was probably maybe I was 4 or 5, and of course I heard people talking about seeing things and talking about colors and all like that, so you know, naturally I knew I was different in some way in that respect, not knowing what colors were.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have one sister, but there was about almost 11 years difference in our ages, so I was nearly 11 when she came along.
Oh, she's a little sister. My goodness. So for many years, you were basically raised as an only child.
That's correct. I had the run of the house for several years.
Was it difficult for you to adjust to having another sibling in your house? Do you remember any difficulty with that?
Well, not really any major difficulty. You know, I was kind of looking forward to it, you know. And I remember I was in school at the time that she was born, in school at the Tennessee School for the Blind. And I recall very vividly when I got the call that my sister had been born. There was this one girl there in the office when they called me in to take the call, and she ran back down, beat me back down to the band room, and ran in saying, "Larry's little sister's a girl."
I would hope to think so. That is really funny. So you went to the Tennessee School for the Blind. Did you go to that school throughout your entire school career and until you graduated?
Yes, I did. That was slightly before the days of mainstreaming. And I started in 1949 and graduated in 61.
So you were telling me that you had friends that you participated in childhood activities with. Did you have many friends amongst your peers in your neighborhood at home, or were most of your friends from the School for the Blind?
Well, yes, I had friends in my neighborhood. Like I said, you know, other kids pretty much my age, several that I played with, you know, when I was home during the summer. But considering that I was away for 9 months out of the year, I didn't get to make that many friends outside of the neighborhood, you know, in my early years.
So at what point did your parents pick up on your interest in music? And once they realized that you had an interest in music, did they take any steps to encourage you along those lines? Like, did you acquire a piano at home or anything like that?
I was almost seven years old when I started taking piano. And I started actually during my first year at school. And when I came home that summer at the end of the school year, before the end of the summer, we had found a piano because they knew I was interested in it and hoped that I would continue with it.
And I assume then that you learned how to read Braille music and things like that. Was that easy for you to pick up on?
Well, you know what they say about kids. A lot of times when kids are learning something, they don't know something's supposed to be hard, so they just take right up, you know, take to it like a duck to water. I didn't really consider it to be all that difficult. I just pretty much learned the Braille music along with, you know, the regular Braille reading. When I was learning to read the Braille alphabet, learning to read words from the Braille cards and that sort of thing. And it was a little bit confusing, you know, as far as when you started getting into learning the difference between the eighth notes and the quarter notes and so forth. But it wasn't really all that bad.
I assume that since you've been in so many bands and stuff that you also have the ability to play by ear and pick things up without reading music.
Yes, I was fortunate in that regard. And in fact, when I was in, well, actually, I was in the eighth grade. I hadn't gone into high school yet. We used to play the Christmas parade at Christmas time, and our band, the school band, and after one of those sessions, when we came in before we put our instruments away, a few of us got to jamming and playing When the Saints Go Marching In, and, you know, a few little tunes that we knew. And we got this idea in our head. We thought we'd try to form a Dixieland, New Orleans-style Dixieland jazz band. So as it turned out, there were enough of us to get together with the right instrumentation that we were successful in doing that. And we carried that on through graduation, and did quite a bit of playing through high school with the Dixieland band.
How many were in that band, and what instrument did you play?
I played trumpet. Normally, the typical Dixieland band usually has six pieces. It's usually three horns, trumpet, trombone, clarinet, and then the rhythm section, bass, piano, and drums. Well, we had an extra trumpet in our group. We had two trumpets, and as it turns out, the other guy who played the other trumpet, I played one trumpet, and then we had another guy who played trumpet. He played the lead part, but we had to teach him, you know, his part. We would teach him the basic melody line and sometimes, you know, a little fancy part from time to time to embellish the melody with. But I would play an extra harmony part, but we still had the trombone and clarinet too, so we had one extra horn in the group.
It's neat that you were able to keep that band together throughout your entire high school. If you started in eighth grade, then you were together for about 4 years. And did you actually do some gigs outside the school, or were most of your playing engagements school-related?
Yes, we did. After we finally got practiced up and got a few tunes under our belt in our repertoire, we started going out. Superintendent would take us out to do PR for the school. And, you know, he would usually make a speech about the school, and we would play at Lions Club banquets, Rotary Club, Kiwanis Club, various functions like that. And we eventually entered the East High Talent Contest and won it, and won a trip to New York to audition on the Ted Mack and Arthur Godfrey show, which we were never permitted to appear on. They said we were good enough, but they felt that people would give us pretty much a sympathy vote since we were all blind.
Boy, I think that there would be a lot of people that would be hollering discrimination these days if something like that happened. What was the name of your band?
Well, we just went basically by the Dixielanders for a while. Sometimes we were called the Dixieland Ramblers, but pretty much the Dixielanders. That's the name that stuck.
Were there any other events before we move on to college or post-high school education type activities? Were there any other events in your high school years that you think would be noteworthy to talk about?
Okay, just one thing before I leave the Dixieland group. One thing we used to do, myself and the trombone player in particular, on rainy Saturday afternoons, we used to get these Dixieland tapes and listen to the solos and see how close we could pick out the solos, you know. We were actually, you know, training our ear and trying to improve our ability to pick up the hot licks and the fancy runs and things like that. And I think it helped us quite a bit in that regard. And also, one of my interests that I got into, well, I got interested in it when I was about 11 or 12 years old, is ham radio. And I got my first ham radio license when I was 14. My novice license, which was the beginning license that you start off with. At that time, it was good for only 1 year and was non-renewable. So that was strictly for using Morse code. And you had to have 5 words a minute sending and receiving. And you could get on and talk to people during that year and get your speed up to the 13 words a minute required to upgrade to a higher class license, which I was able to do within the year. My call was KN4RUC when I had the novice license, and then you drop the N when you upgrade to the higher license. So my call was and is now K4RUC after I upgraded to the general class license.
So I assume then that they had ham radio gear at school there that you had access to?
Well, we had a radio and electronics instructor. There were some people who used to take electronics. Some of the adult blind that would come to the rehab would send to take the course there at the school. But, of course, some of the students were able to take it at the same time. And I got started in that and learned my background, all the necessary things I needed to pass the amateur exam. You had an exam on FCC rules and regulations and your frequencies that you're permitted to operate. And you got into basic electronics, Ohm's law and things like that. And had some questions for when you get into the higher class licenses. You didn't have this on the novice, but when you went for your higher class, you had questions on circuit diagrams that you had to answer that required using Ohm's law. So I got exposed to all that stuff since we were fortunate enough to have an electronics instructor there at the school.
Congratulations on making it through, and it's neat to know that you're still involved in that. Okay, so when you graduated from high school, did you go to college or any vocational training or anything?
Yes, I went, started in the following September in college at the University of Chattanooga, which later affiliated with the University of Tennessee, but at that time it wasn't. It was just University of Chattanooga then. And I started there in the fall of 61 and didn't know for sure what I was going to major in, but I figured I'd probably major in music, and I did. With my major in piano.
You said you went to the University of Chattanooga, and what did you take up there?
Well, I ended up majoring in piano. I got a Bachelor of Music in piano.
So were you actually going to be a teacher at that point?
Well, I had thought about it, but I decided later on that I didn't think that was really the route I wanted to go as far as, you know, teaching in the classroom. I do teach piano. I have private students. I've done that for several years. And I think I like that, you know, the one-on-one type teaching better than I would have enjoyed the classroom situation.
Were you involved in any extracurricular music activities at this point in your life? Did you start playing with bands or anything like that?
Well, actually, I had plenty to do. Well, I was in some of the music functions there at the school, you know, in the chorus, and I played in the, naturally played in the school band, and was in the school orchestra a time or two when they did, you know, musicals. They did Kiss Me, Kate, and some different musicals from time to time that I took part in.
And this was in college?
Yes, it was.
Did you actually play an acting role in those, or did you sing in the chorus, or what was your capacity in the musicals?
Well, I sang in the chorus part time, and then I played in the band, usually in the musicals. Most of the time I played trumpet in the band.
Okay, I have a note here from my preliminary interview that I did with you. It says, playing guitar left-handed. Could you refresh my memory on that?
Oh, I had a guitar for a while as a kid, and I used to strum around with it, but I ended up, it was more comfortable to me to play it, as I found out later on, what most people consider backwards. I played it left-handed and had the little string at the top instead of at the bottom. but I didn't have any problem with it that way, but I never had any actual guitar instruction. What I learned from, you know, other people telling me how to make a certain chord, and I just learned basically how to chord and strum a guitar. I never considered that I got to the point where I would consider myself as a player of the instrument, because you know, I consider someone a player if they can play like the finger-picking style that Chet Atkins does. That's what I would like to do if I was going to really get into it seriously. But I never got that far since I didn't have the proper instruction. I, at the time I started fooling with the guitar, I already knew enough music theory and chord, had enough background in basic chords that I could figure out what I wanted to find. My problem was getting to the proper position and getting using the correct fingering to be able to get from point A to point B quickly enough. And I could probably have done something with it had I had some proper instruction with it, but I didn't know anyone who could help me along those lines at that time.
So you never actually learned to play guitar to the point of being able to play it in a band or anything? I never did either. I took a year of guitar lessons and had a heck of a time with, like you said, the fingering and stuff like that. So what was your first experience as far as being employed in a band besides your experience with the New Orleans jazz band that you had in high school?
Okay. I played for a quartet group. It was actually a part-time thing. They used to travel on the weekends, the gospel quartet, and all the members had other jobs during the week, and they would usually leave out on Friday nights and, you know, go sometimes on a long trip, sometimes not really all that far, but, you know, usually out of town. Sometimes we would go up as far as Detroit, and we played as far south as Florida. And I ended up being with that same group on a part-time basis for, off and on, for about 27 years or so. The group stayed together for about 32 years and retired in 1994.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Did you sing in the group, or did you just play piano?
No, I didn't do any of the singing. I just played piano. And during that time, we had a recording studio. This was also a thing on the side. To give you a little background on that, there were a couple of guys who were brothers who lived here in town. At that time, they were, when they started the studio, they were playing in a rock band called Smokey Jam. And they used to do some taping then. they started out with the studio in the basement of their home, and later on expanded, and we had a place downtown when I got in partners with them on the studio and the quartet. We started producing some of our tapes there later on. So I got a chance to get into a little bit into the recording aspect of things and, you know, get some experience at working in the studio, playing synthesizers and overdubbing extra parts. Of course, the early synthesizers were rather primitive by today's standards. You know, when you go back, like the early ARP synthesizers, some of them you could only play one note at a time. You couldn't play chords. And I remember in the early days they had a couple of those synthesizers. One, I think you could play two notes, a maximum of two note chords, and the other one you could only play single note lines on it. So you'd have to take two synthesizers to be able to play any chords. That was really something. They've really come a long ways with the technology as far as the development of the keyboard that they have nowadays.
Yeah, I remember those things, and they had some pretty phony sounding sounds in those days too.
Yeah, they've become much more realistic and lifelike nowadays.
I think the internet burped. Oh well. I was saying that I have a note about piano tuning, and I assume that that's another trade that you have taken up and become involved in.
Well, actually, I got a chance to take a course in that. When I was in high school, we had a piano tuning instructor. Well, actually, the band director at that time also taught piano tuning. And so I had a chance to dabble in that and get some preliminary instruction. So I was asked when I graduated, or about the time of my graduation from college, if I would be interested in taking that also as an extra, you know, to have as an extra vocation. And it sounded like a good idea to me, so I jumped at the chance. And I took a course in piano tuning and repair. At the time, they had a course offered in Talladega, Alabama, at the connected with the school down there, the adult blind department. And it was a 2-year course. Sometimes people finished earlier. I was there, I think, about 15 or 16 months and completed the course in piano tuning and repair and went into that. So actually, I have ended up with a sort of a multi-level job doing piano tuning and repair and some piano teaching, private piano instruction, as well as playing in bands and playing whenever time permitted and when the appointments came along, playing for weddings and other freelance things that I, you know, received calls on in between times. So it's actually worked out pretty good. They've complemented the three things have complemented each other quite well and have helped, you know, sometimes of the year, like in the summertime, sometimes the piano tuning business kind of runs in cycles and it's slower usually in the summertime. Of course, like there are certain times when it peaks, like around Christmas time and around the end of the year. Christmas time, churches are preparing for their Christmas musicals and want their pianos tuned, and at the end of the year, schools are giving concerts. So, you know, you have that to count on. But then, like I say, the teaching has helped, as well as the playing jobs in between to supplement the income. Although I've done fairly well, I guess, considering the area. This is not really a metropolitan area where I live. So I guess all in all, I've done pretty well over the years.
Well, if you look closer, I'd have you tune my piano. It needs it right now. It also needs some work done on the action, but see what happens when you live halfway across the earth? Anyway, have you ever done the traditional piano bar thing where you just kind of sit and play piano and everybody sings along and stuff like that?
Oh, yes. I've played for a few of those. I've played for a few restaurant-type gigs and played piano. I've also played Hammond organ for a few of them, too.
Have you ever been a church organist?
Well, not a church organist. I have filled in on occasion at church. I do play at church now, although we have a regular designated pianist and organist, and I just fill in with extra things on the keyboard, play for specials and whatever, and sometimes I'll put something in on the sequencer, put in all the parts and save them to disc and then play the piano with it with the keyboard live so I can have all the other parts and sound like a one-man band.
How fun. So what type of work are you doing now? You were saying that you still had piano students. And are you presently working in a band?
Yes. I am playing with a group. We've been together, coming up on a year now. It'll be a year in January when I started with the group. And we're playing regularly at a little dance hall place. It's pretty much a family oriented place. It's not a bar. They don't serve any alcoholic beverages. The strongest thing they have there is Pepsis and popcorn, little snack things, you know. But people come there and do square dancing, waltzes, and two step and the like. Just have a good time on a Friday or Saturday night. Actually, we're there three nights a week, Tuesday nights, Friday nights, and Saturday nights. And we play from 8 till 11:30 on Friday and Saturday nights, and from 7:30 till 10:30 on Tuesday night.
That's a real cool concept. I wish we had something like that here, because I don't know if it's more in the Southern culture or whatever that families go out and dance like that, but I just think that's really neat. And I know for myself, I sure enjoyed playing venues like that and show venues and things like that where people were really there to listen to the music rather than the bar scene or club scene, when a lot of times people don't even know that you're there hardly.
Yes, it is much better. I certainly prefer it. I don't like the atmosphere. I have to play in these dive joints, you know, where fights have been known to break out, and like you say, where you don't know if people are listening or not. Sometimes you're just the noise in the background.
What is the most embarrassing or unusual or perhaps even frightening situation that you've experienced as an entertainer?
I can't really think of anything much in particular. I remember one thing that happened one night, though. I had just gotten this new keyboard. Well, it was new to me, and I hadn't fully had enough time to get familiar with it, and I ended up getting it set up on the wrong sound, and it blurred out there with a fuzz tone guitar sound, when that's definitely what I did not want at that time. That was rather embarrassing.
Yeah. Yep, I would suppose it was. That's kind of interesting with those types of things. Now, we're coming down to the end of the hour, and of course I want to leave some time for questions and answers. But do you have a family, or do you live by yourself, or What is your situation like now?
Well, I'm currently living with my mother, mom, and dad, and they're both getting on up in years. I've never married, you know. It just never happened. Had a few times when it was naturally I've dated a few people and had relationships, but it just never, for various reasons, never reached that point. So I've been a bachelor all my life.
Well, there's some advantages to that too, I'm sure. I guess from coming from both sides of that fence, I can understand both sides. But it sure is neat to make your acquaintance. And before I open it up to questions and answers, I would like to thank Cliff for the use of your computer. And our connection held out pretty good. There was just that one little time where it was a little glitchy, but otherwise it really came through really well. So before we open it up for any questions, are there any additional things that you would like to say?
Well, I can't really think of too much. I think we've pretty well covered most everything. I don't know. Be glad to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Yeah, Larry, this is Bob, Wichita, Kansas. Are you still involved in the Tennessee for the Blind alumni meetings and all that? I know you were 2 years ago.
Oh, yes. I attend the alumni. I have been for the past several years, pretty regular, the past 6 or 8 years, and enjoy getting together with some of my old friends that I've been able to reestablish contacts with.
Yeah, this is Nocturne 36. I'm a ham operator. My call is KB3DHG, Kilo Bravo 3, Delta Hotel Golf. Did you say your call was K4 Romeo Uniform Charlie? K4RUC?
My ham call is K4RUC, Romeo Uniform Charlie, or as I sometimes say, K4, rather unusual character.
Larry, having been single all these years, I just wondered, do you have any plans or aspirations of getting married, or do you plan on being a bachelor the rest of your life?
I would like to get married, and, you know, I have someone that I'm... have become very close with on for the people that we'll just have to see what maybe happens on down the line.
How many groupies do you have?
Well, I don't know as far as groupies are concerned. Sometimes we need a few roadies to come help tear down the equipment and load it and so forth. But haven't really had a lot as far as people that follow us around all the time.
I wonder if Terry or Becky or someone could play your cut from the Peeps album, or if you have any music of your music to play, Larry. Some definitely a wonderful, wonderful sound, Becky.
If you give me a minute, I might can pull it up here.
Oh, goody.
Something struck a question in my head, Larry, when somebody was saying something else, and I can't remember for the life of me what it was now. Shoot. Oh, well.
That's the way it goes sometimes. Those little thoughts pop in, and then they disappear.
I have one for you, Larry. Back when your band started and developed over the years, did you find that most kids your age were more involved in either country or rock, and what you were doing with your band was a little different?
Yes, that is quite true, because that was along about the time that Elvis Presley was the craze, and, you know, I like some of the 50s rock and roll. Actually, I like some of the 50s rock and roll better than some of the later rock. But I never was really big, never really got big into that. I was more a big band swing fan and that type thing, and enjoying the jazz. And like you say, that was a little bit different compared to what a lot of my peers were into at that time.
Were you ever involved in playing with Dan on a regular basis?
Playing with what? I missed one thing there. Was I involved in playing with what?
Well, I know that you and Dan from Dallas went to school together, and I just wondered if you guys ever had some real jam sessions.
Oh, most definitely. In fact, he was one of the members of that Dixieland band that I spoke of. He was the trombone player with the group.
Actually, Jock, I think that was what I was going to ask. So thank you for refreshing my memory. Did you find your recording, Becky?
Yes, I did.
All right, go for it, girl.
Okay, this is a song. It's called Friends, and it's on the Peeps Superstar CD that is still available for sale.
When your troubles feel lonely, and it seems your whole world is turned upside down, when you feel low and you pack your things to go, everybody needs a friend. And friends like you are treasures there, a friend. Much more than gold, friends are something money cannot buy. When I'm feeling down and all alone, I can always call you on the phone, and the things you say brighten up my day. It's so good to hear your voice again. For friends like you are treasures rare. A friend so true, who's always there, someone who cares, your trouble. Friendship is a very precious thing. When the clouds of gray are everywhere, and we find our trials hard to bear, one kind word or touch can often mean so much. Let someone know that you care. always there. Someone who cares, your troubles to share. Everyone who needs a friend, to see them good things and bad. Who'll be true until the end.
Did you write that song, question number one, and question number two, who was the vocalist?
Yes, I did. I wrote the song, I wrote the words and lyrics. Get this thing to stop talking here. I did the lyrics as well as the melody, and pretty well pleased with the final, how the thing finally turned out. And the vocalist on that was David Haney. His family goes to our church, and he has since moved out to California. He's in, I forget what town he's in. I think he's close to Los Angeles out there now. Last I heard of him.
I love the chord progressions in that. Soak them up like a sponge. Gorgeous, gorgeous chord progressions in that.
A beautiful song, Larry, and I think you are singing harmony on the tail end there, aren't you? And when are you writing the peep song, Larry Fane?
Well, I have been playing around with a few things and, possibly incorporating that one little idea that you mentioned to me one time. And I've got something right on the very beginning that I might could use. But I've played around with a few ideas, but I haven't come up with a completed product yet.
Okay, I'll keep nagging you.
And Mar, I guess we're even. You just asked questions I was going to ask.
All right. Well, that's good. We're tracking real good, aren't we there, Jock? Well, we've come down to the end, and this was really, really fun. Of course, you know, my first experience was Spotlight. I interviewed someone that I basically knew, you know, that was a good friend of mine. And after doing this interview, I've gotten to know you a little bit better too, Larry, and it's been really an honor and privilege to be able to speak to you, and you're so relaxed, and you did such a fantastic job and made my job so easy. And thank you so much for joining us. And again, Cliff, thanks for the use of your computer. And thanks to all of you for joining us here on Spotlight today.
Yeah, I appreciate Cliff letting me come up and invade his premises for a while and make use of his fine cable connection, which I don't have. Hopefully I'll be on cable here before too long, but not yet anyway. It's good to be able to enjoy listening to everybody without so much of the breakup that I end up hearing a lot of the time. And you made the interview help to make it relaxed and easy. I was a little bit on edge, this is something a little bit new, doing these interviews, and you don't have any prior knowledge of what the questions are going to be. They're liable to fire them at you from any angle or any topic, you know. Sometimes that's a little disconcerting.
Wonderful interview on both your parts. And just like to have a chance to say, Larry's, besides being a wonderful musician, is He's a really nice guy. Really enjoyed getting the chance to know you over the rolling on to years now, Larry. Thank you to Becky Buckner for coordinating Spotlight, the wonderful job she does, and to Dennis for all the recording and editing.
And be sure to tune in next week.